We all have Korea currency. And Korea currency is essentially like how much do the decision makers in my organization want to invest in me, invest in my growth, invest in keeping me, right? Invest in me being the person who they've got in their succession planning pipelines, ready for the next big thing. But so often, conventional career advice will continue to say things to you like, just keep working harder, your work will speak for itself, sit back, your time will come. What it misses though is that performance is only 50% of the career currency equation. Relationships are the other 50%.
Claire, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on. Can we start at the beginning? Because for the audience that has just tuned in, can you give us a bit of an overview into who Claire is, your background, and what brought you here today? So Claire, over to you.
Yeah, well, big question. I always like to start whenever anybody asks me the question, like, who is Claire? Or just who are you in general? I think it's obviously such a big question. And whenever you hear people answer that, most people will start with the roles that they play, you know, friend, wife, mother, son, whatever it might be. Those are roles we play. They're not necessarily who we are. And just like the work that I do is part of who I am, it isn't who I am as a human. So as the human being, I love a good belly laugh. I often snort when I laugh as well. I love to travel, I've got a little sausage dog called Kransky who's currently sitting next to me snoring right now. So hopefully that's not coming through the mic. My husband and I love to go on adventures, whether it's close to home or far. We just love exploring new things and kind of being curious. In terms of the work that I do, I'm very fortunate that I get to work with individuals and organizations all over the world, essentially helping organizations keep their best talent and working with individuals to help them be the best talent in whatever way that sort of looks for them. And so that's meant through kind of programs, workshops, coaching, online courses, speaking. Like I've got, you know, lots of different ways I get to work with people, which is really exciting. But one thing that has always stood out to me in the work that I do, my corporate background, before I started my own company, my corporate background was in sort of human resources and communications for about 15, 16 years. And then obviously starting my own company since then, I've worked in and with many different industries all over the world, from, you know, mining, oil and gas, retail, technology, fintech, communications. And I always find it so fascinating that irrespective of the industry that we go into, although, you know, the product that's being sold or the service that we're offering, human beings at their core want to feel heard, seen, valued, and understood. And so even though it might look a little bit different, it might stink a little bit differently, like in essence, as human beings, we are largely wired the same. And so that means a lot of the work that I do, or well, it might, you know, be branded a little bit differently based on the culture of that organization or the different acronyms that they might use. As humans, we're wired for connection. We're wired to feel like people care about us and like we care about other people. And so in essence, that really drives a lot of the work that I do, and is why I essentially picked all of the things out of my HR career, all the parts of that role that I loved, and then kind of got rid of all of the things that I didn't love and formed a business around that, which I've been doing now full-time for 5 years, but was also doing it as a side hustle for a little while before that as well.
Incredible and so needed. And I just want to just pause to hold space for the fact that you took the leap from employee to entrepreneur. That's always a journey in itself. And I think the biggest growth can come when you start your own business. I thought I had everything sort of understood how my industry worked in recruitment. And then I started my business and thought, oh, this is definitely a new experience for me. So we'll just maybe just start there, because I definitely want to dive into what you do for work, because there's a lot of listeners that tune into this podcast every week that are hiring managers, that are HR professionals, that have teams that you know, they're very big on sort of recruiting the right talent, but also most importantly is keeping the top talent as well. And then I love what you just said then as well about the individual, because I think it's really important as individuals, we take responsibility to ensure that we're showing up as our best selves and we're offering value to the organization. And that's how we're going to get promoted and seen, and all the opportunities are going to flow to us as well. But just going back from stepping in from a HR role to starting your own business, what have you learned about yourself, Claire, during that time? Anything you wanted to share that might be sort of, I guess, beneficial for the listeners to learn from?
Mm. Oh gosh, you learn so much about yourself when you step out into your own company. I think probably the first thing that comes up for me the first thing that came into my mind when you asked that question is you know, knowing yourself and being open to continually learning about yourself is one of the best gifts that you can give yourself. And I guess what I mean by that is that you know, when you run a business or even when you're in a corporate role, there are always skills that you need to be learning, right? There's always more knowledge that I need to consume and understand to be able to solve problems. But there was something about when I started my own company, and essentially I was no longer a person as part of an organization where essentially I could hide behind that organization, I could hide behind the brand. I now am the brand. And so you kind of naturally start to attach your ego, right, which we all have, your ego to things a lot more. And so that can mean sometimes where, you know, maybe you don't get the gig that you're really hoping for. You know, maybe they decline your proposal, or maybe you get ghosted, or you don't hear back from potential clients. It can be really, even though your rational brain that might have dealt with the same situations in a corporate role knows, oh, people are just busy, or not everybody is the right fit for everybody, or, you know, all of those kinds of things, it naturally feels far heavier and takes a lot more self-awareness and kind of state management to be able to rationalize it when it's happening to you as the entrepreneur, because you're investing in a different kind of way. And so I think to answer your question, that was the first thing that came up for me in terms of that transition and just how important it really is to know yourself, know your triggers, know that, you know, there'll be certain gremlins that come up for you, you know, stories, because you're doing things for the first time. And sometimes those stories can really warp the reality of what is actually happening versus what you're telling yourself is happening.
I can definitely relate to what you just said then. And it actually goes back for me about the identity piece you said at the start, because when I started my business, I realized that I identified so much of my sense of worth into what I did. And if the business wasn't having a good week or a good month, it meant I wasn't a good person and I wasn't enough and I was a failure. And I've had to do a lot of work to detach from the outcome and to really be aware of what expectations am I placing on myself, because it's the expectation we put on ourselves that's the worst piece about it all. It's like, you know, it's been a real journey for me. So that's why I always ask that question, because I think you just constantly come up against yourself all the time. And this is like anything, whether you're starting a business, you're stepping up into a leadership role, you're doing anything that scares you for the first time, you are going to come up against yourself. But rather that than staying stuck in my comfort zone and then maybe regretting that the things that I didn't do in my life. So it's just really interesting when I speak to people that have taken a leap and backed themselves, what they experienced throughout that journey. But you learn, so much about yourself.
Absolutely.
So what was what drove you to do it? So you were in HR for a long time. Like you said, you've identified that people want to be seen, valued and heard. When did you sort of go, right, I want to start this side hustle, which then has now become your full-time business? Was there some pivotal moments that happened throughout your career that you thought, I can really turn this into a business now?
Yeah, I think for me, I probably didn't fall into the category that I think a lot of people fall into, where they have just had a gutful of what they're doing and they're like, there's got to be something, like, I hate this, I want to do something completely different. I loved particularly my last corporate role before I started my own business. I loved the people that I work with. I really enjoyed the environment. I wasn't unhappy at all, but the more I guess I started getting really interested in learning about myself more and more and sort of doing a lot more personal and professional development, I just started asking bigger questions, I think. And that essentially translated into me sitting down, and I give this advice to my own clients or potential clients that come to me feeling stuck in their own careers. I sat down one day and I just drew I got a piece of paper and I drew a line down the middle. And I wrote a list of, you know, when I'm having my best days, like when I get home from work and I just had that warm feeling in my heart of like, oh, today was a great day. Like, what were the kinds of things that I was involved in doing? Not necessarily a task list, but just like, what were the kinds of things that I was doing? And then equally as much when I was having those days where I would get home and I would be like, bottle of wine, straw now, what were the kinds of things that I was doing there as well? And so I sort of did that list, you know, I didn't do it in one sitting. I kind of built on it over time because there's, you know, more and more things come up for you. And then I just did a bit of analysis around the list. And it was really clear to me that when I was having those really good days, it was because I was involved in things like leadership development, kind of engagement conversations, coaching leaders around how to navigate challenges that they were facing, building programs, all those sorts of things. And then on the days that I really didn't enjoy, it was a lot of the other areas that I was responsible for at that time as the head of HR for that organization. And so I thought, well, what might it look like if I was able to upskill myself a little bit more in the areas that I do really enjoy? And so that was the catalyst for me to go out and get a formal kind of coaching, like organizational coaching qualification. And my work at the time, I put a case forward to them and I said, I'm really interested in learning more about this space. I believe I can bring the learnings back into the business. And so we'll get an ROI on that because I plan to do X, Y, and Z with it. Would you support me? And they were fantastic and did. And that was really the springboard for me to kind of upskill myself, practice it inside the business, whilst then also starting to practice it a little bit externally through some one-on-one coaching with people on weeknights, weekends. And then I, you know, believe it or not, I got my first corporate gig in 2019 for a company. I was living in Melbourne at the time. And the first corporate gig was actually for a client in Greece. And so they were flying me over to Greece to run a leadership program for their senior leadership team. And then we had a few months following that of virtual kind of coaching. And so I basically took leave from my full-time job to go and do my kind of side hustle over in Greece. Like, what a great place to have as your first gig. And then really it sort of all, I mean, I'm not going to say the rest is history because it's not. It is a hard slog. You know, this was the end of 2019. So we all know what happened in 2020. But really for me, that curiosity piece, asking what do I love, what do I not love, and what would it look like if I could do more of what I loved, was really, and then testing it with the market internally in my organization and then externally, was the catalyst for me to kind of learn and grow from there.
I just think that's absolutely fantastic and something that's so practical that everyone can apply to their own life and their own career. Yeah. Because sometimes I think you mentioned the word stuck, and this comes up quite a lot. I'm stuck. I don't know what to do next. And I think sometimes we just actually need to just pause and sit down and ask ourselves these key questions. And what do I love? What do I not like? What did ideal day look like for me? And, you know, when I'm sort of lit up, what have I done that day? When I want to just come home and down a bottle of wine, what day does that look like? And I think these are really important questions to ask ourselves. So I think that's a really, really powerful exercise for everyone to do when they're making sort of like maybe a career transition or pivot, and really sort of thinking about what are my skills and what do I really enjoy out of these key skills. So I love that. I think that's a really, really practical example. But you just sort of also touched upon then about the challenge as well. And I think that I really want to sort of dive into this word comes up a lot at the moment about that sort of resilience, that adaptability. So you've just started your business and then boom, as we all know what happens in 2020, COVID hits. How did you, Claire, like, because I think this is really, really important for people to listen to the backstories of people's, because when it comes to success, we only see the tip of the iceberg. We see Claire write the book. We see Claire, you know, launch the leadership training. We see her fly to Greece. But we don't see all of the struggles and the lessons learned from getting to the peak. And you're probably not even at your peak yet. You're still going. But what did you learn about yourself during that hard time in business and when you had to show up and the whole world felt like we were sort of was collapsing around us?
Yeah, great question. I think that what's really important for everyone to reflect on, like whether you're starting your own business or you're in a corporate career, I don't think it's about wondering when the hard times or the challenging times that require us to be resilient will stop. Because I think the reality is like there's always going to be something new that's going to keep like making the goalpost move, or like right when we think everything's settling down, something, you know, Molotov cocktail will come on over the fence and you're like, okay, so we're not done. So I think for me, it's actually been particularly over the last 5 years or so around like, how can I just actually get comfortable with the idea that I'm probably never going to be comfortable and I'm probably never going to feel really settled. And perhaps that's actually the point. And so there, to your point, there is a lot of conversation around resilience. And I think resilience is so important. And I do talk about resilience as kind of a superpower in my book as well. But I also love the idea of anti-fragility. And the difference between the two is this idea of like resilience is around, you know, how I don't act like the problem's not there. Like I need to accept the challenge. I need to understand the challenge. But being able to kind of bounce back from setbacks. Whereas anti-fragility is like I get stronger because of the setback. Like in the face of the challenge, it's actually a building block for my character to get even stronger again. And I kind of love thinking about it that way because shit's going to continue. Sorry, I don't know if I was allowed to swear. If not, beep it out. Like shit's going to continue to get flung at us. So instead of thinking, and COVID obviously for many people, COVID just happened to be like on a 10x scale for so many people. And that was their experience that required that resilience for the very first time. But it isn't going to be the only thing. It's just the thing at that time. So for me, to paint a very real picture, the end of 2019, my husband and I, we both quit our jobs. We sold everything we owned in Melbourne at the time. And our plan was actually to go traveling in 2020 and try to kind of build the business up just virtually whilst also having that year to kind of go on an adventure and explore. And we'd been chipping away at that goal for like quite some time. We got a couple of months up front in South America, which was amazing. We went hiking, did all the things. Probably the fact that we were in Spanish-speaking countries and I didn't speak Spanish at the time and wasn't really maybe aware of how bad things were actually getting. Maybe that's what saved us in some respects, but we ended up getting stuck on a small sailing boat for 11 weeks at sea through the thick of COVID, you know, rationing food, showering once a week for 30 seconds, like all of the things, before eventually getting back. We got a lifeline from the Australian embassy who said, we think we can get you on a plane one-fifth of the way. You then need to kind of get yourself the rest of the way. So we eventually got back to Australia in May, not without its challenges, trying to get a flight when you didn't have the next flight and then they wouldn't give you the flight until you could prove you could get there, which was just a wild experience. But we eventually got back to Melbourne, flanked by army vehicles, police officers. You'd think that we were murderers by the time we landed back, sent straight to hotel quarantine, did 2 weeks there. And I remember just thinking to myself, how can I make this work? Like I'd written an article and at that time I wrote an article about my experience in HR, which just happened, I think, to resonate with a lot of people. That went viral. And all of a sudden I found myself sitting locked in a hotel room for 2 weeks without being allowed out at all and essentially pretending like I was working from my home office with all of these like people emailing me and leads coming in saying, oh my God, I feel like you understand us in HR. Can we talk to you? And so I share this to say two things. The first, think less about how can I get through this challenge, whatever this is, and think more about how can I just reframe to acknowledge that life is a challenge? How do I learn to dance in it? And then I think the second part is what that then looks like practically can sometimes mean that you can have the vision, don't get rid of the vision, hold the vision, but don't hold so tightly as to how you get the vision to come to life. So those would be like my two biggest learnings, I think, through that period that required resilience and anti-fragility.
I'm just so glad I asked that question. That is such an incredible story. And, you know, but you're so right. We don't grow when everything's easy. We grow in the face of challenges, and it really does define our character. And there's a quote I've heard, and I keep on reminding myself that problems are a privilege, and the only people without problems are in the grave, right? So if we're living and breathing, we're going to come up against problems, and we're going to have to solve them. And that is going to be the biggest, I guess, thing that companies and businesses and people look for in their employees as well, which is why I'm saying to people, you know, problem solving is going to be number one. Critical skills, adaptability, resilience, all these things that get thrown around are super, super important. But what a story, Claire. I can't even imagine being stuck on a boat. Oh my God, showering once a week. I mean, in those moments though, like just out of curiosity, how did you actually get through like those really, really tough days? Like, did you allow yourself to just feel upset, cross, angry, sad, or like what were you sort of going through and how did you process that? Because that's quite an experience.
Yes. And it was hard. Like it was, especially because, you know, we'd spent quite a few years beforehand saving and dreaming and planning and, you know, all of the things to kind of realize that it really wasn't going to happen. And I'm like the eternal optimist. And so I do remember the day where I finally realized like that this was a big deal. Like I was still that person that was like, it's fine, it'll blow over. And then I remember the day where our flights from what would have been like we were in the Caribbean where we got stuck on the boat. And when I say that, people are like, oh, boo-hoo, you're in the Caribbean. I assure you, it was not a super yacht. It was not like a luxury experience. We were still very lucky and we were safe, which is really all that matters. But it certainly wasn't what I think people see when you think about this dream of being in the Caribbean. But I do remember one day when the wind blew a certain way, we were able to get signal. And so every now and then we're sort of able to check, you know, your emails or whatever. And I do remember the day where we got these emails basically cancelling all of our ongoing flights to the next destination. So we were due to go to Europe from Central America. And I remember the day that they all just got cancelled. And that was when I realised, like, this is not going away. This is kind of a big deal. So I think in terms of the way you deal, to your point, I think it is about owning and feeling whatever you need to feel. Like grief, you know, we often associate grief only with death or loss of some sort. And while that is true, I also believe that you grieve the loss of what can feel like a dream. You grieve the loss of the thing you worked really hard for that maybe didn't go the way that you wanted it to. And so I think there is a power in letting yourself grieve that, feel whatever you need to feel, then zoom out a little bit more and accept, okay, well, it's not that anymore, but it is this. And what, you know, what can I get from this? And then really try to lean forward into that. And so that's sort of what we tried to do. And I think, you know, again, long story cut short, after we got out of hotel quarantine in Melbourne, you know, I am grateful for the fact that we ended up getting back in a very small window where Melbourne was coming out of lockdown. Before then, and I lived there, I've got so many beautiful friends there that did such a tough time through that when they've got locked back down again. But I'm grateful for the idea, for the fact that we kind of came in this window where it was opening up. We said to ourselves, okay, the dream, the vision is clearly not going to look like this year what we thought it was going to be. But we said we wanted an adventure. So how else do we create an adventure? And so for us, that basically ended up looking like coupled with we were not allowed to come back home to my home state of WA at the time. So we were like, how do we make the most of this? We bought a secondhand four-wheel drive and a secondhand rooftop tent, and we just drove up the East Coast for the next like 5 months. And I ran my business from the roof of our car, from various camping, places all over the East Coast. And so I share that to reemphasize the point again that sometimes you do have to zoom out and remind yourself that even though the thing might not have looked exactly the way you thought it would, whether that's business, your career, your life, whatever it might be, it might look a little bit different, but actually, are you still achieving the goal you set out to do? Which for us that year was adventure. And I can hand on heart say that we had an adventure that year and we walked away with so many experiences that we wouldn't have otherwise had.
Such a fantastic reframe, and what a story you've got to tell, and what an example you're going to be for your clients and things. I think it's just so, so powerful. I'm so glad I asked. And it's funny how you said about traveling up the East Coast. That's exactly what my husband and I did. We did up a Sprinter van, and we traveled exactly all over the East Coast during that time. I mean, I was in Queensland at the time, so we had a bit more flexibility and freedom up there. But as soon as every border opened, we went down to New South Wales and eventually ended up in Melbourne. And now I'm living in Torquay, and it was just, it's actually such a interesting part of my life. And again, it's what you focus on in those moments as well. Because if I focus on things I couldn't do, I can't go see my family in the UK. I don't know when I'm going to see my mum again or my dad or my brother. That could have literally instantly made me feel disempowered, sad, frustrated, angry, all the things. But instead I was like, no, what can I do now? What can I do instead? And what adventure can I go on? So I love your reframe. I think these are just really, really powerful tools and lessons for people to really hopefully integrate into their lives. But let's go on to talk now about the work that you do for businesses. Because as I mentioned to you at the start, run a recruitment company. Companies are very big on attracting the right talent, which is fantastic. But what are the companies doing to retain it? So let's start there. What are some, I guess, strategies, some things that really work that you've experienced throughout your career and your business that companies can implement to really keep hold of their key people? What do people want, and what's keeping people in businesses?
Yeah. There's not a one size fits all approach to retention, which probably brings me to the biggest piece of advice that I would give to any leader, any business owner with employees is just actually know your people, right? Like if you want to come up with effective retention strategies, know your people, know who they are, what they value, like what is it that actually gets them up in the morning beyond just paying their bills. And sometimes I observe organizations will make a false assumption that salary is everything. And now don't get me wrong, salary is important. You need to be competitive to attract great talent. But we make assumptions sometimes that if we just pay people more, that will keep them. Sometimes it does in the short term, but if you've got a shitty culture, no development pathways, people can't see what all their hard work is for and how they actually contribute to the outcomes of an organization, just giving them a small pay bump isn't going to solve that problem or keep them engaged for the long haul. So I think, I guess to answer the question, don't assume pay is the only motivating factor, because for many people it's not. I mean, we only have to look at the media at the moment and the ongoing conversations, facepalm, we still keep having around the working from home debate. And the number of people who are departing organizations or actively looking because their organizations are kind of forcing, mandating return to work full time. And so now there's a very real portion of people who feel like, well, you're taking something from me. We've proven we were capable of doing it. It was saving me money. It was saving me time. It was enabling me not to have to spend my weekends potentially doing all my laundry or, whatever it was, because I could chuck a load on while I was working from home between meetings. And people think, we'll take that away and we'll give them a salary bump and that will fix it. Don't assume that. Know your people. Know what motivates them. Know the difference between the person who is here to do, they want to come in, they want to use their expertise to drive outcomes, they want to do their job well, and then they want to go home. They don't necessarily want leadership opportunities, they don't want to climb the ranks. Know that person versus the person who might be sitting next to them, who is hungry for growth. They're hungry to learn. They're hungry to see how far they can go inside that organization. Right? The differences in how you might retain those two people is different. Therefore, we can't kind of have that one strategy. But it's amazing sometimes, and you probably observe the same thing. I walk into organizations or have conversations with people, and we assume that there's just a one size fits all to what people need, and we'll come up with these big fancy strategy documents and policies to tackle retention without actually asking the people in the organization about, like, why are you here? What is it about here that you enjoy? What is it that wakes you up in the morning? And how can we do more of that for you?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny how you say about the salary increase, because that's how, when I was working for my last company before starting my business, they just kept on throwing money at me. Here you go, Georgie, here's another pay rise. And I was like, no, I don't want that. I actually am craving to use my brain in other ways. I'm craving some creativity and actually some flexibility as well, because it was 5 days in office, 8:30, 5:30. Yeah. So, but they just thought, oh, we'll just throw money at Georgie and that will solve the problem. And it didn't. And they ended up losing me and I started my business. And I think that's what a lot of organizations are experiencing right now. But just going back to then the knowing your people, how should an organization go about this? Should they do a survey, a pulse check? Like, what do you recommend when you go in and consult?
I think multi-pronged approaches are good. Like, surveys are great. You know, if you create, you know, you can do an engagement survey, understand what it is that's working, what's not working, what your people value, what they don't value. But I always put an asterisk on surveys, because the only thing worse than not doing a survey ever is doing a survey and then doing nothing with it. Like, because if you want to erode engagement even more, you'll ask people what they think and then you'll do nothing about it. Then people really feel disengaged. So if you're going to do a survey, make sure that you're doing it at a time where you are actually prepared to make the space that's required to close the loop on the data that comes in. So play it back to people, have the deeper conversations that are probably then required based on what the data brings up for you. And then make sure that you're actually playing, you know, you're not going to be able to do everything all at once, and you're not probably going to be able to do half of the stuff that people want on there. But employees respect transparency and they respect openness and honesty and inclusion. So just make sure that if you are doing it, you then kind of come back on what we heard, what we're doing about it, what we can't do and why, and then and what else we, you know, what else we want to talk to you about to understand more of. So I think surveys absolutely have their place to drive more meaningful conversations. I think from a individual perspective, leaders just having those conversations with their team members around, you know, talk to me about what it is that lights you up. Talk to me about which parts of your job do you really enjoy the most? You know, pretty much what we were saying before, when you're having your best days, what are you doing? When you're having those days that you really feel like you're not contributing in the way you want to, what are you doing? You know, when you think about your career, what is it that gets you out of bed? Where do you want to go? What feels important to you? Just taking a genuine interest and asking those kinds of questions in a way that is genuine and organic, and as opposed to a tick and flick exercise, you know, on a template that somebody gave you, like actually just engaging as human beings, I think then enables the leader to be able to think about, okay, so this is important to this person. They've just told me that they're really curious about understanding more about, you know, increasing their business acumen inside our organization. They want to learn more about commercial finance, how the ops team works. Great. I'm going to hook them up with the managers in that team so that they can pick their brains and start to understand more about it. Great. All of a sudden, the employee's like, oh, wow, like my leader listened to me. They're helping me actually achieve the thing that I said that I want to do. I can see growth here. But we can't do those things if we aren't prepared to engage in a conversation with the human being.
Yeah, I think that's just so powerful. I think the best leaders are those that actually can listen and then hopefully get the buy-in from the organization that once you get all that feedback, they can do things. Because what I just don't want to see, Claire, what my biggest fear is that we just go back to these, we have these blanket rules for everyone. And business is a group of individuals coming together to create a company, a service, a product. And I don't have all the answers right. And I think the bigger the company, maybe perhaps the more complex it gets. Because I had this conversation with someone once. They said to me, well, if I do it for one person, Georgia, I've got to do it for everyone. And I'm like, Well, but not everyone might not want what that person's got. And this person wanted a bit more flexibility. They just had a young family. And their approach was like, no, I can't give this person that, because then Sally and operations is going to want the same. And then so is Derek. And then all of a sudden we're a completely remote business. Like, they go to like the worst case. I'm actually, I think if you just give people that sort of freedom and autonomy to run their days, I actually think you're going to get the best out of that person and you're going to keep them in your business, as opposed to them go, well, do you know what? I can go and work for that company down the road that is fully remote. So I'm off. And that's how great talent leaves. But it's complex. And I think that companies are just really struggling to retain their people right now, attract great talent. It's a very competitive market as well, especially in technology. But I do think that the companies that will win the retention is those that listen and really think about the individuals in their business, as opposed to just having one blanket rule. This is how many days in office we're doing. This is our policy for this and this and this. And I think that's the quickest way to lose good people.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on. And we often create these policies geared towards the lowest common denominator. So perhaps we had an experience inside the organization where somebody was working from home and it was found out that they were, you know, pulling the piss and they weren't doing their hours, they weren't delivering. So we go, oh, well, we can't do that. We better create a policy then for everyone so that we no longer offer this because, you know, Joe ripped us off. And so then we create these blanket policies, to your point, that are grounded in fear based on a tiny, tiny minority. And so instead of dealing with that minority, we'll punish everybody else because of that. And I think I agree that the bigger the organization, in some ways, the more complex it does become. However, I also think, you know, the latest 2024 Gallup report has reported disengagement is costing us $8.9 trillion US dollars a year. In Australia, I think it's about 218 billion of that, right? So like these significant figures. And we're winning and losing it in categorical thinking and trying to force fit everybody into the same solution. So if you want to keep great talent has options. Great talent doesn't need just you. If you want to keep really mediocre talent and you just want bums on seats, fine. You could probably get away with doing what you like. And those people will rock up, they'll sit in their seat, they'll YouTube cat videos all day, and then they'll go home. But if you want really great talent, capable of taking your organization to the next level, capable of solving problems, capable of innovative thinking, capable of really driving potential of the other people inside your organization, those people aren't prepared to put up with crap. So we've got to find a way to make sure we're able to give them what they need to do their best work. Now, don't get me wrong, when we talk about flexibility, flexibility means it's flexible both ways. I think people get mixed that up sometimes and they think that when we talk about flexibility, it only means that the employee is requesting flexibility for themselves. Flexibility means the elastic band stretches both ways, right? So when we talk about things like that and providing flexibility, autonomy, all of the things that people are craving, it does mean a conversation around how does this work for us both? And I think sometimes that's the part that's missing. And then that leads to the categorical thinking around policy that everyone will be forced fit into, instead of having, again, the deeper conversations around what do you need in order to do your best work? And what do I need in order for our team to also be able to do its best work with you being a part of that team too?
I'm sure everyone listening to this right now is just nodding along, Claire, completely agreeing. No, I love it. It's fantastic. And you've got all the insights. You're going into businesses. You're hearing it firsthand. And, you know, it's really, really important because I think, yeah, you're so right. There's just one individual we could just focus on that and then think that no one's productive. Everyone's clocking off at 2 o'clock to walk the dog. You know, it's like, no, actually, that's just one individual when nobody else should be penalized for that one individual. Let's deal with that individual as opposed to just having a blanket rule for everybody else. So I think you're spot on. Talking about the individuals now, because you mentioned you do the business consulting and the individuals, what advice would you have for individuals right now that are listening to this, that are just sort of ready to maybe take the next step in their careers? They're, you know, they're maybe ready to step into a leadership role, or they're, you know, just sort of like maybe doubting themselves a little bit at the moment. What can the individuals do to really step up, be seen, be visible, and take the next leap in their careers?
Yeah, great question. Look, I think there are so many things that we can do to increase visibility, credibility, relationships, all of those sorts of things. I think the first thing that comes up for me in answer to your question is around get clear on what it is that you do really want and what your definition of success is, because, you know, a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm ready for that next step and I just want to grow. Love that. But when we drill a little bit deeper and we say, well, in what way, they're often not sure. And so then the most obvious thing that people do is, well, I'll just look up, meaning I'll just look up the ladder. That looks like the next thing I should do. So therefore, I guess I will do that. Whereas my suggestion, and maybe that is the right step for you, but get really clear on what it is you actually want first, right? If you think you want to be a leader, great. Wow. But, you know, but when I say a leader, I mean manage a team of people. Great. Why? Like, what is it about that appeals to you? Is it just that you think that that's the next step to a bigger paycheck? Or do you want the title? Or do you want some of the other benefits that come with it? Or do you actually really like the idea of the fact that your work and the way you get outcomes now is going to shift from being you for you to you getting outcomes through and with a team of people? Am I prepared for the fact that I'm going to be having a hell of a lot more one-on-one conversations about how people feel and the struggles that they're having, right? Like, so really, I think the first part is ask, like, what do I really want and why do I want it, right? Because when we know our why, we can withstand almost any how. In terms of increasing visibility, I think it's really important that we understand for our careers, right? We all have career currency. And career currency is essentially like, how much do the decision makers in my organization want to invest in me, invest in my growth, invest in keeping me, right? Invest in, you know, me being the person who they've got in their succession planning kind of pipelines, ready for the next big thing. Like, how, like we, I do so for most of us, we want a strong career currency. But so often, and, you know, conventional career advice will continue to say things to you like, just keep working harder, your work will speak for itself, you know, sit back, your time will come, all of these kinds of pieces of advice that really are geared around just keep working harder, just keep doing a lot of stuff, know a lot of things. What it misses, though, is that performance is only 50% of the career currency equation. Relationships are the other 50%. So if you want to increase your visibility inside your organization, really understand who knows you already, who doesn't, and who do you need to know you in order to help you to get wherever it is that you want to go. So that might be a lateral move. It actually might be that you're like, oh, I think I'm kind of curious about, I don't know, what the customer success team does and how they provide deliverables for the organization. So maybe it's a lateral move. Maybe it's actually that you're just curious to increase, again, your own business acumen because you know that you do want to grow into more operational roles, move away maybe from being a technical expert and more to a generalist. And so you're like, I kind of got to understand how the business works, right? But once you know that, you can work out, well, who's who in the zoo and who do I need to know and how can I start building a relationship with them to increase my visibility and then therefore increase my potential opportunity in the direction that I want to move towards. And then the last part that I would say too is around this idea of strategic self-promotion. So if I had a dollar, Georgie, for every person over the years, particularly in my corporate career, who's come to me and been like, I'm annoyed or I'm frustrated that I wasn't considered for that opportunity. And then my first question is, well, who knows that? Like who is aware of that that's something that you were interested in? And oftentimes the opportunity that they feel disgruntled about not being considered for is not an obvious step, right? Like it's not like you were customer service team lead and you weren't considered for customer service manager, right? It might be the equivalent of like, I don't know, customer service team lead being upset that they weren't considered for the marketing manager position. So it's just like, it's not a given. So therefore, who knows, again, about where you want to go? And so when I talk about this idea of strategic self-promotion, I bucket it up alongside asking for feedback. So as you start building these relationships with the people who need to know you in order for you to move wherever it is that you want to go, coupled with your own manager, et cetera, coupled with HR, whoever it is, recruiters, whoever it is that needs to know you, your conversation might look like, hey, Georgie, as you may know, I'm really curious about learning more about what the marketing team does, because I think it is an area that I'd like to eventually move into. I've been working on my skills around X, Y, and Z to help get me there. What else do you think I could be doing to increase my chances that I might be able to be a part of that team at some point? Right. So that is a way of combining strategic self-promotion with proactivity, because you're showing like, well, I'm already doing some of the things I think I need to do, coupled with asking for feedback from somebody in the organization who's got juice, aka decision-making power, to help you keep progressing in the direction that you want to go. Instead of doing what most people do, I'll sit back with my arms folded and expect that someone will read my mind and it will come my way.
This is so good, Claire. I just love it. I do. I'm smiling because I talk about this all the time and you've just put it in such a perfect way. So 50% performance, 50% relationships, and then that whole strategic self-promotion piece. I just love it. And you're so right. Like there's this quote that just get your head down, do the work. Like, no, get your head down, do the work and make sure everybody knows and needs to know that you did it. Be seen. I think it's just so important. And then going back to being the driver's seat of your own life, like if people don't know where you want to go, and if you're not clear on that yourself, like you say, if you're climbing someone else's ladder or someone else's version of success, you're not going to progress in the way you want to. Or maybe you'll end up in a role and go, oh, actually, I don't really want to manage people. I don't really like people that much. I'm actually probably better off doing that. You know, it's, we need to sit with ourselves. We need to understand ourselves. We need to, like you said at the start, know thyself. This is just so, so important. And I just don't think it gets discussed enough. And I think this is why we have a whole generation of people maybe going through slightly sort of midlife crisis. I was speaking to a psychologist the other day and she sees it all the time. People just coming to her feeling really lost and stuck and unsure. And it's because they've not sat down and thought, what's important to me? What do I want? What does my career look like? And then the next piece is obviously having a plan of how you're going to get there. And then it's forming those relationships with those that can help you get there, because we can't do it all on our own. So this is so powerful. So thank you so much for sharing. I just know everyone's going to be like, hopefully taking notes and thinking about how they're going to apply this to their own career.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, they definitely will. But I want to come on to your book now as well, which I just, like I said to you at the start, I've just got so much inspiration from those that are writing fantastic books. So what I guess sort of made you want to write the book? What was that little process like, or big process like? And what can we expect from the book? Because I'm sure people would love to go and grab it when it comes out, if it's not out already.
Yeah. Look, I think I've had that book brewing in me for about 15 years now. And so people often ask the question around like, did you find it really hard to write it? I didn't. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely had those days where I stared at my screen and just the cogs weren't turning and nothing was coming out. So don't get me wrong, like on a day-to-day level, I had some days where the words were, you know, came out beautifully and I felt really great about how I articulated them. And then I had other days where I was just like, I don't think my brain is working today. But in terms of like what I knew I wanted to get out of it and why I felt like it was so important, I think really it's grounded in 15 years of HR roles. And as I said at the start of this conversation, like working with different people from all different industries, all different walks of life, all over the world, and just watching these same things happening over and over and over again, coupled with this conventional advice that I keep talking about, which is grounded in just hustle, 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 just keep working really hard, but without stopping and asking, like, is my input equaling adequate outcomes, or is my inputs, aka time and stress, actually not delivering outputs and outcomes in the way that it should? Like, is the areas that I'm spending my time, my energy, my heart actually getting me closer to where I want to go, or am I just walking around like a mindless zombie? And so I think for me, that's really where the book has come from. It's geared around a 5-part career framework, which we know are driving forces to creating a career on, you know, in your way, on your terms, that feels good and gets outcomes for your team and your organization. So the book goes into a lot about like self-awareness, vision, and mindset. We talk a lot about brand and the power of reputational capital, which essentially is like, if I walk into a room of people at your work, how do they describe you? Are you happy about it or you're not? So we talk a lot about that. We talk about accelerating growth through relationships. So like this whole piece around like what actually is relationship currency? How do we build it? How do we drive influence? Even if I don't have a formal leadership position, I'm still a leader. I still get outcomes through collaborating with other people. How do I build it even more so? We talk about performance currency and the fact that performance isn't just knowing a lot of stuff, right? Like the world's moving too fast for you to be the smartest person in every room. You like just having a lot of knowledge but not being able to get outcomes through your knowledge isn't going to help you anymore. You need to be able to get the outcomes. And then we talk a lot about future-proofing yourself. So how do we make sure that we don't get so busy being busy that we then look up one day and realize that all the trees around us have been chopped down and I'm just clinging to this one that's left and no longer holds any relevance? So a lot of what we've spoken about on this call is in the book, super practical. You know, I'm like self-deprecative humor all the way. So there's a lot of my own career limiting moves in the book and the lessons that I've learned from them, but really like bite-sized actions for readers to not just, it's so easy to read a book, you probably resonate this with Georgie, and be like, oh, that was lovely, put it back on my shelf, collect dust, do nothing with it. I don't want that for readers. I want them to actually be like, oh, I see how I can immediately take this learning and do something with it today. And that's really, I guess, what my hope for the book is and for readers of it is to do the doing of the book as well, to set yourself up for success.
Love it. And it's called Less Hustle, More Happy. And I'll make sure I link that below so everyone can go and grab a copy and buy the book. But we've covered a lot of ground today, Claire. And honestly, I could actually sit and chat to you probably another hour. So I have to have a part two. But anything we haven't discussed today that you want to leave the listeners with that you feel like is just, another little bit of wisdom you can share from your perspective?
Yeah. Look, I think the thing that I always go with, the thing that comes up for you straight away is often the best thought. I think for me, when I was writing the book, I came across this stat, which is in the book, which talks about this idea of, on average, if we are to live to the average global age of 70, it means we get 25,550 days on Earth. And for most of us, we will work in some capacity for about 2/3 of that time, in some capacity. So my question is, what do you want to get out of it? Right? Like beyond just paying your bills, what do you want to get out of the work that you do and the contribution that you make? How do you want to feel? And I think if we can spend more time reflecting a little bit more on that and less time measuring success based on my title, my status, what I earn, you know, where I sit in the org hierarchy, I think we will find a lot of the weight comes off our own shoulders around what I think I should do, what's expected of me. And we'll see a world of people that are more engaged, more connected, and more fulfilled than ever before. So I think that's probably my mic drop, peace out moment.
Love it. Definitely a mic drop moment. Claire, where can I send people? Where do you hang out the most so they can go and connect with you after this podcast? Yeah.
I love LinkedIn. So you can find me on LinkedIn if you just type in Claire Sieber, or you can jump over to my website, clairesieber.com.au. I've got a page there for organizations. And then I've also got a section for individuals as well. So we've got like free podcasts, free blog, free quizzes, freebie magnets, all sorts of things that people can jump on and consume to kind of help themselves keep growing and learning in their own careers as well.
Fantastic. And all of that is in the show notes below. Claire, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I will have to get you back on because there's lots of things I still want to ask you. We've run out of time, but thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me. I would love to jump on again whenever you're ready, Georgie.